This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Dash and Lily. Yay! Jinga, 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 jinga. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one and join us in the new year because we're going to keep on doing it until the new year. So yeah.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready?
For One Dry Kiss.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies and series and anything else we feel like covering. And just to be clear, we are going over episode 3 and 4 of Dash and Lily today. Mm-hmm. 2 episodes for the low, low price of 1.
Yay.
And I am here in Oakland's premier hotspot, Mixers, a.k.a. Corinne's living room. And I am here with my co-host, who is the mocktail to my party, Corinne Edding.
And I am here with my co-host, who is the oh-so-pretty umbrella in my drink, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Oh, so I'm an accessory.
Yes,
I'm not
you are.
I'm not the main show.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying.
I'm not the intoxicating concoction that people get.
You're the frosting, not the fiber. I'm the one that makes people shit.
Oh.
You're the one that makes people smile and be like, yum.
I don't know. Sometimes people might say yum if they shit. They might be into that.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So we are on month 2 of our roommateship.
Yes.
Corinne, how you feeling? How you feeling about everything?
So excited. So fucking thrilled. I am here for it. My roomie is not as excited and thrilled.
No. No. I had the saddest trip to Target today.
Oh my gosh. You went to the special Target though.
Yeah.
You went to the Target that I intentionally don't go to. But you were like, I don't care. I just want to go to Target and I want it to be closer. And I was like, okay.
Not that per se. I do want to get to know this neighborhood.
Yes.
So I figured I'm going to start with the closest Target and then expand out.
Mm-hmm.
The closest being the one in Emeryville.
Yes.
That was really fucking depressing.
Yes.
Gentle listeners, I fixed my hair because I haven't been out of the house and God knows how.
It looks fucking gorgeous.
Thank
your hair
you.
Looks fucking gorgeous.
Thank you. I have been out of the house, but it's mostly been with greasy hair, no makeup, and in clothes that I've been wearing for a couple of days. Anyways, I digress. So, did my hair, took a shower, put on a full beat of makeup to leave the house for like a half an hour. And it was like the most depressing Target trip I've ever had. There was a full-on like SWAT team right at the entrance, which kind of put a damper on the whole Target trip.
Yeah, very much security at that Target, yes.
Oh, yeah. And then even though it was in the middle of the afternoon, it was fucking busy, which is...
Yes.
I was hoping it would be a little quieter and I could like peruse the aisles, but no. Every single aisle where I needed something had 6 or 7 people in it, which was...
But here's the thing. If I had known that you weren't going to get the delicious popcorn, I would have told you just to go to one of the 2 lovely Safeways that are in my neighborhood.
Mm. So, gentle listeners, Corinne introduced me to this glorious Target popcorn.
So fucking good.
Of which I am a full-blown addict. Garlic Parmesan popcorn?
Yes.
Holy balls. She bought it the other night when we went to Target because we're Target junkies and opened it in the car. And although it sucked the moisture out of my entire body, it was so good that I fucking almost ate the whole bag that night and then swore I was going to buy 62 bags at my next Target run. But
I said 5 billion on the list that I gave you.
That's being a bit excessive.
They come in. There's just an entire fleet of popcorn in here. You're like, now I don't need a new mattress. See? I've got popcorn.
And we don't need to get new chairs. You could just lay anywhere you see popcorn. It's so great. And if you happen to pop open a bag, you got instant snacks right there. It's awesome. I was considering it, but part of me wanted the popcorn. And part of me didn't want to spend more than the $10 bill I had in my jacket. And the $10 bill argument won out in the end because the total for everything I got today was $9.98. And I was like, oh.
What? Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. That was the highlight of my day.
That's fantastic.
I don't know if I mentioned it, folks, but I'm going through a breakup right now. So.
Tam called, you know, our bachelorette apartment mixers, which is totally true. And we were in Target just yesterday and we picked up
Target Junkies.
Yes. Our favorite grape Spindrift.
Oh, God.
And so we get home from Target and I'm going to cook dinner because I had an idea of what to do with Thanksgiving leftovers, which worked out great. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was like, oh, I've been wanting one of these grape Spindrifts so bad. And so I just like immediately open the container. I crack one open. I get the ice. I start putting it in the cup because they're not cold. I'm putting it in the cup and I'm like, wait a minute. Tam's in the bathroom right now. She comes out and I'm like, delicious grape Spindrift. She might not appreciate that very much. So I ask her, hey, do you want some grape Spindrift? She, yes!
You asked me while I was on the toilet.
Yes.
You're like, hey, Tam, do you want a icy Spindrift? Yes. You don't even have to finish that sentence. Oh, I'm sensing that you're into this idea. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Did I answer too brusquely? Ask me again. I'm sorry. I'll be more polite. Hey, Tanya. Yes. And then I'd made it clear that had she not poured me an icy beverage and only poured herself one, that I would be giving her eyes of death from across the apartment for the whole entirety of the evening.
And she modeled it while she was like folding a plastic Target bag as she like glared at me and ironed down the Target bag with madness. And I was like, okay, you get the drink, you get the drink.
You could have felt that stare from the next room. Yes. That's one of my superpowers.
But we at Mixers, we believe in drink equality.
Mixers, the home of drink equality and grape Spindrift. If you haven't tried it, please give yourself a treat. And if you like sparkling water and you like flavored sparkling water and you want a nostalgic throwback to your childhood, try some grape Spindrift. Only cold, though. If it gets warm, it gets a little.
Yeah, it's not as good.
Yeah, it's not as good. Definitely not as good. Anyways, now that we have thoroughly talked about our last two trips to Target.
We live the wild bachelorette lifestyle.
Living la vida loca.
Tam's like, since I've moved in with Corinne, we've gone to Target and we've worked on assembling a puppy pooping puzzle.
Yeah, at Mixers. But I do have to say that my trip to Target today without you it just made it sad. Like, I am not used to going out on my own. So when I do go out on my own, it makes me feel that much more single, which is still a fresh feeling for me.
Yeah.
That I'm dealing with very well. Thank you for asking.
You're doing great.
I've cried every day this
Yeah, but you're crying less than you were when you first came to visit me.
This is fair. This is a fair statement. And also because I put on a full beat of makeup, much of which I got on a Black Friday sale at Sephora with my sister. Hey, Denise. I got to test the waterproofness of it today.
And your under eye concealer totally held up. Fantastic.
Yes. It's because I have the eyeshadow primer and then the face setting spray. So I've got like twofold adherence on my face and eyes. And so I was like weeping going, this bitch better not run. I swear to God, there's like $36 on my eyes. It better not go anywhere. And it didn't.
Yay. So, you know, because we are a rom-com podcast and we have not been covering movies recently because of me, it's all my fault. I'm the problem. It's me, Corinne, to be clear. But we still do watch movies. And so while we are not recapping these three hot off the presses Netflix holiday movies, Hot Frosty, How Many Dry Kisses?
Oh my God, like 2.5? No.
Wow.
Two.
I'm like, you're more generous than me. I gave it one dry kiss. I was like, that movie was a stinker.
Okay. 1.5. It was, well, first give all the titles because we watched Hot Frosty. We watched Mary something fucking.
Mary something fucking. Yes. Okay. The Merry Gentleman.
The Merry Gentleman, which was a stripper-based movie.
Yes.
And then we also saw Our Little Secret.
Yes. Yeah. With Lindsay Lohan.
Yes. Hot Frosty, not hot. very weird.
Yes.
The premise of the movie essentially is a woman puts a magical scarf onto a very chiseled snowman out in a one winter's evening. Mm-hmm. And of course, the snowman comes to life.
Yes.
And then ultimately, it's childlike. The snowman doesn't know, like, social interactions really well. And he's always really super happy and helpful.
Yes.
And then she falls in love with him and through her love makes him real.
Yes.
Had kind of a little bit of a pedophile vibe to it, if I'm going to be honest.
Because he's so innocent.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah.
And at first she was like mommying him the whole time. Like, we don't do that. You can't go there. People are dangerous. And then she's trying to fuck him.
Yeah. And I love Lacey Chabert. I think yes. She is a delight.
Yes. She couldn't even save this movie.
No. The guy who played the hot Frosty was just fine.
He was in something else. We found out he was in.
Yeah. Oh, no. He was the vet in Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yes. The vet boyfriend from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
That's right. And he did a very good, naive, newly unthought man about town.
Yes.
He played that part beautifully.
Yes.
Was it a good part? Yes. Was it a good movie? No.
No. No. So, like, I would say that everybody did a good job in the roles, but you can only do so much with a script. And I would say that I have seen so many Hallmark movies that I like better than Hot Frosty is the issue here.
The only reason why I gave it more stars than I think you did is because yes. I had so much fun talking shit about it the whole time we watched it.
I know, because watching movies is, like, so fun
it's
together.
It's a good shit talk. No, especially yes. bad ones.
Yeah. Then there was The Merry Gentleman mm-hmm. with Chad Michael Murray.
Mm-hmm. And his hair.
Oh, his hair. His hair, like, that was basically the movie, was his hair.
It got wilder and crazier and more styled with every emotion he was portraying.
Oh, my gosh.
Feathered gloriousness.
It was a lot. There was so much hairspray. I bet he had special Aquanet chipped in just for his hair.
Mm, and the highlights upon highlights.
He is very blonde.
Oh, very yes. blonde.
Yes. He also had very lots of abs.
Do you want to tell the premise of that their movie, Corinne?
Okay. There's a dancer who is in a New York dance review show, but she gets fired for somebody younger. And she goes back home, a la Hallmark movie traditionnelle, but this is Netflix knockoff, to find her parents and their struggling music/bar that's called something like Rhythms or something horrible yeah. like that. That just made me think of the rhythm room.
I think the rhythm room. Yeah.
Yeah. That just made me think of the contraceptive
yeah.
method.
Yeah. Because people are fucking...
And their bar/music venue is struggling. It's past its heyday. And it's going to get sold to a smoothie corporation.
Smoothies.
And so this woman, she's like, oh, you know what? Hey there, hunky handyman. Let's do a show where you dance around topless. And he's like, cool. That's totally fine. Let's get the brother-in-law in on the action, too. Oh, he's like, cool. That's totally fine. Like, none of them bat an eye
no.
at dancing around shirtless.
Yeah. She even gets the cab driver that drove her into town. She goes, oh, that guy had some moves. Let me just go ask him. Hey, cab driver, would you like to be part of my men's stripping show?
Yeah.
Yes, I would.
I know.
Oh, great. Okay. Come on. Follow me.
And the older gentleman who was warming the bar stool, who was the star of Grease 2.
Mm.
Also, there we go. He's like, you know what? You guys can't hold on to your sticks when there's only three people instead of four. Oh, I'm going to save the day.
She was the Pied Piper of strippers.
Yes. Like, the whole concept, I give it 2.5 dry kisses for hot bodies, but that's about it.
Yeah. And spoiler, the premise works. The strippers are so popular that they were able to save her parents' bar. I know, shocking, right? What's even more shocking is these men rarely took off their pants. It was always a shirtless review.
Yes.
Nothing else was coming off. I was pissed. I give it 2 dry kisses because I'm like, are you kidding me? I would not pay. No. those guys would probably just take off their shirts if you asked them to. They were so inclined to be strippers. You'd probably be like, hey, handyman, I'll give you an extra 10 spot if you clean my gutters with your shirt off.
They did not even like discuss compensation for the guys. So exactly. It's like, I was just like, are they doing this as a charity project?
That's a big question that I had, because in one of these pivotal moving moments towards the end of the movie, she was like, I'm going back to my old job because they want me. And they're like, what about us? And I'm like, is she paying you?
Yeah.
Because you all are gainfully employed before. So I'm assuming she is. Maybe you're getting some of that sweet, sweet, bare-chested money that's apparently really good in this small town, because women must be really lonely. But yeah, I had the same questions. Yeah. I'm like,
Yeah. And when their bar was crowded with people, there was like 8 people.
Yeah. No. Like 15. Yeah,
okay.
And they're charging a $30 cover. So how much is that real quick? 30 times 15.
I don't know.
Plus you got to pay the dancers. Damn, that was not the hot ticket that I thought it was now in hindsight.
Yeah, no. Look, I enjoyed the shirtless bodies. The premise and the plot, once again, terrible. Mm. It's like for Hot Frosty and for Merry Gentlemen, it's like they took Hallmark plot word poetry and then they threw it on some metal and saw what stuck, and they were like, okay, we're gonna include those things.
Yeah, definitely did some like refrigerator poetry with that inspiration. And lastly, just the other night we watched Lindsay Lohan's Our Little Secret.
Yes.
And there were secrets abound. It wasn't just one secret. It was secret upon secret upon secret upon secret.
Fucking Christmas of Lies. Hello. Oh,
yes. Yes. Yeah. That was an ample.
That's what it should have been called. Christmas of Lies.
Exactly. I'm not going to give you the premise to that because it's fucking banana saw. It's just basically everybody in this family that's spending the holidays together has some sort of lie that they're keeping from everybody else. And it all tumbles out in interesting and quirky ways throughout the duration of the movie.
By far the best of the three.
I agree, which is why I'm like, you're going to have to watch that one. We will give you the courtesy of telling you these other ones are stinkers. If you want to watch them and talk shit amongst your friends, more power to you.
And the first two do have shirtless men.
Yes, yes. You can take the volume all the way down and still enjoy it immensely.
Yes.
I would say Our Little Secret is definitely a watchworthy movie for the holidays. Yes. And I was so happy that Lindsay Lohan is rebranding herself as a rom-com holiday queen.
Yes. And I give that one 3.5 dry kisses.
I'd have to agree with you. Yeah. I enjoyed it immensely. And there was lots of surprises. I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Or that. Jesus Christ. And there was a very interesting scene where Lindsay Lohan partook of many, many THC-laced gummies. And the fallout from that was worth it.
Oh, it was like all the things I don't like about being high were encapsulated in those moments. I was like, yeah, that's not fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Being I've been high. There. No, I don't like it. That's why I don't get high.
And then getting called up in the front of the church to read a children's story. And then having the Virgin Mary have a conversation with you. Not the real Virgin Mary, just the statue that's to your left.
You know, but hey, so glad you're helping me out, Virgin. Yeah, thank you.
Just a typical Sunday morning.
Yes. So that, you know, that was downright enjoyable.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
But enough about all the Netflix movies we're not going to cover in this episode. Corinne, do you have a synopsis for the first two episodes of Dash and Lily that we covered last week?
I believe you said to me, I am confident in your ability. Lility, huh? Huh? That's
so,
what that
I'm
was
so
you.
Funny.
Uh-huh. To dash along and give us a good synopsis of the last two episodes.
Oh, hmm. The melancholy brings out the creativity in me, for sure.
Great. Let's give you more pain in your life so you can just get more creative.
No, thank you. I'm pretty full.
So, in the last two episodes, Lily, a high school student, unexpectedly ditched by most of her family during Christmas time. Her parents went to Fiji for a very belated, quote, honeymoon. But both Tamara and I are suspicious of their, quote, honeymoon. And her grandpa, who went to Florida to visit his lady friend, who is absolutely not, he's not romantically involved with. No, not him. Once again. Uh-huh.
I think he doth protest too much.
Seriously. Those who are adulting are Christmas of lying it around. I'm just saying. That combined with Lily not having any friends her own age because she's quirky, having a romantic soul and having her brother as a possibly good influence or at least mischievous influence on her, leads her to leave a red notebook with basically a scavenger hunt for love, hoping that serendipity and the fates will bring the perfect single and interested in dating girl's boy into her life. And serendipity and the fates do conspire, and a bookish teenage boy named Dash, who is very hipster and wants to hide from his classmates and family, who has coincidentally also ditched him for winter romantic travels, finds the red notebook, completes the quests, and from there, Lily and Dash pass the notebook back and forth, completing different quests and writing back and forth, not knowing who each other is, but definitely getting to know each other better. The quests Lily has Dash do share her joy of Christmas and the holidays, and the quests Dash has Lily do pushes her out of her personal comfort zone. Throw in an irate Santa, a bestie named Boomer, some spoken word river, and the Pogues fairy tale of New York, and you have episode 1 and 2 of Dash and Lily.
Yay!
So, Tam, are you ready to dash into episode 3 of Dash and Lily?
I sure am. And this episode, episode 3, is titled Hanukkah.
Ooh.
Put on your yarmulke. It's time for Hanukkah. We open with Lily walking down yet again a dark New York street. Isn't she walking down dark New York streets quite a bit?
Yeah, because that's where all the ambiance is, and possibly the mugging, but we're just going to ignore that part.
Yeah, had her parents been in town, they probably would have opposed that. But guess what? They're not here. They're on a honeymoon. Anyways, Lily's voiceover asks, "What do I want for Christmas? I want to get to know you, notebook boy. Take me somewhere special in the city that feels like you." Dash isn't there except in notebook form, but his voiceover answers, "Lily, the most me isn't a place. It's a time. Go inside of Grand Central Station Terminal before the first train arrives. I know it's early, but I promise it's worth it. There are a few moments in New York where you can enjoy the stillness of the city without the crush of people around you. Now tell me what you see." Lily, who's made it to Grand Central Station, looks around the deserted terminal, and it's epic.
It's gorgeous.
The marble floors gleam under ornate arches and high ceilings. The cavernous room feels like something out of time, and Lily's voiceover reads her responding journal entry, and it says, "The whole city is dark. But inside here, the sky is lit up with constellations. The world feels big and small and all mine." Mm. On the ceiling of the station are artistic renderings of detailed constellations with their corresponding astrological signs. Each star is illuminated by a light bulb and shines against the contrasting night sky outside. Lily spins around and yells, "Hello, hello, hello." And only her echo answers her back.
Aww. And I have to say, Tam, there's so much pairing of dialogue between Dash and Lily in this, mm-hmm. where they're both in separate spaces and separate times, but they're kind of having a conversation with each other through the notebook.
Yeah.
And you did such a great job of doing that.
Thank you. It's the melancholy again. Yeah.
Great, yeah. Great.
Pushes out the great artistic in me.
Can't wait for you to do the rest of the entire Dash and Lily. It's going to be fantastic.
So you know how I said I couldn't get sadder? That just made me a little bit sadder. I know I'm not working right now. So apparently all the work of the podcast is going to get piled on me. That's fine. It's my cross to bear.
Yeah, I don't edit it or anything.
No.
Dash's voiceover continues. "Enjoy it while it lasts. People ruin everything." We cut to him in the same terminal, but instead of being cavernous and empty, it is full of people milling about. Dash is in line trying to get the attention of an oblivious New Yorker in front of him on the phone. The line has moved, but the guy has not proceeded to the next queue. Kind of reminds me of when Tim and I were waiting in line in IKEA and I was about to take down the person in front of me because they weren't paying attention. And so help me, if someone walked into the giant gap in front of them thinking it was the end of the line.
That guy was an ass. He was so like standing there on his phone, like 5 feet away from his cart, like intentionally. And yeah. I'm like, fucking dude, like, I know the line's boring and you need to play your fucking whatever you're playing, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
No. Okay. I'm glad you felt that way because I was like practically snarling at him. But again, I thought it was like melancholy. So
I told them to move once and they did because there was a giant space in front of them. Like, giant. It wasn't like, oh, a person could fit in there. It was like, oh, a person and their entire flatbed cart could easily fit in there and there'd still be space for a person behind them.
And the people responsible for the giant space was a giant family, but the giant family all left and put the unattentive father in charge of the cart and he couldn't be bothered.
Oh yeah, no, he just like he literally ditched the cart and was standing like a few feet away from it. And I was like, why aren't you just standing with the cart? It just doesn't even make sense. Like, why can't you just also keep an eye on the line, even if you are standing away from the cart?
He doesn't want anybody to know that he shops at IKEA.
And just push the cart forward. Anywho.
Yeah, we're not. We don't have strong feelings about that at all.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
It's all good. Don't worry about it. So, much like me, Dash tells him impatiently, hey, dude, look up. Which he finally does, giving Dash the next spot in line to the Grand Central Information Desk. The attendant hands Dash the red notebook, and inside Lily has written,
I'm so glad you're yawning at your own part, not mine.
It's lacking oxygen. Lack of oxygen!
I know, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Lily's written, so you like stillness. Well, you don't need an empty terminal for that. You can find it in the middle of Central Park, where my cousin is an expert at it. Dash heads to a Central Park fountain. In front is perched a living statue, aka a street performer painted and dressed to look like a statue. And this scene makes me think fondly of when Tamara and I went to Central Park and to the fountain, and when we were walking in the passageway that Dash comes from to approach the living statue, there was a woman singing a beautiful aria, taking full advantage of the acoustics.
I know, I wonder if she was like a professional opera singer because she was so fucking good.
She was so good.
Yeah. And I've seen that like on TikTok where they have classically trained violinists or whatever, like just in open spaces performing just because the love of performing. But she was amazing.
Yeah. And going to Central Park, super highlight of our New York trip.
Yeah. Could have spent a couple days at that damn place.
100%. Lily continues, if you can do what he does for 10 minutes, leave the notebook with him and you're next there and the game continues. I also think it's time I learned your name. Fair is fair. Dash stoically assumes the same position as the human statue and stands there while children taunt him and take selfies. He must have completed the task because we next see Lily plucking the book from the statue's tip bucket. She reads, Lily, I value fairness, but I can't give you my name. It's too particular. And I'm like, Lily's kind of a unique name, but whatever. And it would be easy for you to figure out who I am.
You mean Dash?
No, Lily. I'm just saying, like, how many Lilies did we go to school with?
Yeah, but he doesn't want to give his name Dash.
I know, but he's saying I have a unique name. And I'm like, yeah, but Lily also has kind of a unique name.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that.
Yeah, he does because he knows her name because it was in the brim of Santa's hat.
That's right. Oh, mm-hmm. I'm fired. I'm taking myself off this podcast until further notice.
You can't leave me.
I already wrote out the outline. Just read my parts in my beautiful voice.
You did your voice perfectly. That's exactly it. I'm so glad you understand what your voice is.
I think Dash is just trying to be like, he must want just the upper hand. Like, I can't give you my name. It's too cool and it's too unique. And you totally know who I was if you heard Dash.
And in fairness, I did look this up because I did this whole long rant about it. And then I was like, how common is the name Lily? How common is the name Dash? And Lily is like, oh, in like the top 50 of names or something like that. Dash is like, crickets. There's just, they talk about it being a last name, not a first name.
Oh, okay.
But Dashiell is a, I'm guessing that's what Dash is short for. Yeah. Tam's making a face that looks like she smelled something really bad.
Dashiell sounds like somebody got interrupted in the middle of saying something.
So he can't give the name because it's too particular and it would be too easy for her to figure out who he is. But he says, I'll give you a hint. My name is the Connector of Words, which Tamara can concur with, because the whole time she was trying to use her talk-to-text feature on her iPad, it kept changing the name Dash to simply...
A dash. The line. It was so annoying. It's like, line tells Lily. I'm like, no, no, damn it. Dash. Dash. Ah, fuck it. Typing it out. Dash's next dare is as salty as he is because he directs Lily to a pretzel vendor and tells her to order Lot's Wife, which is a giant pretzel completely crusted with tons of salt.
Seriously, I was like, what is the point of that pretzel?
Dare, baby, dare. She made him sing in front of the bookstore. He's got to get some retaliation going.
How much blood pressure medication would you need to take to eat that pretzel?
We definitely need a refill sooner rather than later. I know that. But she's young.
Yes.
Lily does begrudgingly eat it, then chugs a bottle of water as she guesses, is your name And or? Maybe your name's Andy. I'll call you Andy. You like salty treats? I like sweet. Her next dare directs him to a coffee shop where he samples a bevy of Christmas pastries and cannolis, which we both have strong feelings about.
Yes.
Over her next entry, which asks, what's your best Christmas? I'm sure even you have one. Dash writes back, first of all, I'm not an Andy. Andys are gullible and never would have found you at the Salinger section of the Strand. But as for your dare, my best Christmas was when my parents told me that I would have two Christmases, two sets of presents, two Christmas trees. I was thrilled until they also told me that they were getting a divorce. The only thing I asked Santa for that year was to get my parents back together, but they didn't. I survived, but that's the last time I believed in Santa or Christmas wishes or parents who told the truth. But misery loves company, so how about you? Tell me about your worst Christmas. Corinne is waving her hands in the air like she does care.
I do care, I do care. Because I'm sorry, but that was not his best fucking Christmas. That was probably his worst fucking Christmas. It might have been a moment of super happiness when he heard about two Christmases, but that wasn't actually Christmas itself. And his parents didn't get back together. That Christmas was a super letdown. So, Dash, that was not your best Christmas. Fuck off with that answer.
And my next line reads, Dash surlified that answer with bitterness. I don't think it counts, survey says. But never mind, because we've already heard what Corinne thinks.
I didn't read that part. I was too emotional.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Swiping the rug from under me.
I'm going to just put my part after the...
Oh, no, 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 no. No, no, no. No.
I literally didn't read that part because I was like typing so hard.
Anyhow...
Survey agrees with you, Dale.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah. No, I couldn't get that from your emphatic arm waving or forceful answer. But Lily disagrees. When she has the notebook, she begins responding, how about this one? My parents are in Fiji and my grandpa's in Florida visiting his girlfriend. Don't get me started. But she thinks better of it. Yeah, that would definitely be kind of a what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I've known people like that. Where I'm like, oh, do you like oranges? Yeah, I love oranges until one time this girl gave me an orange and she was my crush and I was like so happy until I actually peeled it and then it was half rotten. And then I really felt like that was kind of a reflection of her emotions on me. And it was because her and her friends were laughing because they gave me this rotten piece of fruit. So now I hate oranges. The fuck? I hated that. I absolutely was like, fuck you, Dash. Seriously. Yeah. And how just Lily being a teenager. Oh, he's so dark and brooding. Oh, he's so deep. The depths of his soul are vast.
Yeah, that's the whole Jordan Catalano effect, I call it, from My So-Called Life, where Angela, whatever her name is, was pining after Jordan Catalano. And when I was in high school and I saw Jordan Catalano, I was like, he's so hot. Oh, my God. I'm totally here with Angela. Yes. Get that cutie boy. And then I saw that 5-10 years later and I was like, dude, Jordan Catalano is a dud.
I know, and Dash is not faring much better.
Yeah.
It's like, not only are you not playing along, but you're like, let me tell you what a dark emotional pit my life is.
We still stand for Boomer is what we're really saying here.
Yeah. And if you don't know what we're talking about, please go back to episode 1 and 2.
As Lily contemplates her answer, the screen splits. This is some of Tam's artistry language going on right here. Super props once again.
Thanks.
The screen splits and we see Dash and Lily sitting at the same table at different times with the same red notebook sitting in front of them. They are sharing a conversation and a moment with each other, just at different times in the same space. Lily revises her answer. You told me something personal, so I'll tell you that my worst Christmas was the one with friendship bracelets.
Lily fucking trumps his shitty Christmas with this story. Okay, back to you, Corinne.
You didn't wave your hands around like you don't care.
That was during sound effects. Like Danny Rojas from Ted Lasso. I bring my own sound effects. They can't see the waving of the hands. So I'm like, I have something to say. Back to the show.
We get a flashback, back of younger Lily in middle school. She's got a handful of friendship bracelets that she's happily handing out to students at the winter dance. And gentle listeners, these two episodes made me cry a few times.
Join the club.
And this was like the start of it all. This story. She's happily handing students friendship bracelets at the winter dance. Her voice informs us, I always made my own clothes. My aunt, Miss Basil E., always told me clothes are like your insides on your outside, and you shouldn't leave that to mass manufacturers. So I made friendship bracelets as Christmas presents for everyone at the Christmas dance. I used the neglected fabrics at the back of the store that nobody would choose. I figured I could relate. We see a handsome classmate approach little Lily and ask for a friendship bracelet.
She calls him E,
yes.
Which I didn't put in here, sorry.
That's fine.
An anonymous.
Yeah, she anonymized him for the purposes of this section. He has never spoken to her before, and she giddily selects a bracelet and hands it to him. It was her secret crush. She's filled so many journals about him. After giving away all her friendship bracelets, middle school Lily happily walks down the halls thinking this was her moment when everything would turn around, only to spy one of her bracelets lying on the ground. Then a few more, then a lot more, as if everyone she had gifted them decided to dispose of them along the same hallway. Lily, heartbroken, begins scooping them up when she notices a short distance away her crush telling his friends, "Can you believe that girl? She is so weird," before dropping her bracelet on the floor as they all laugh.
Fucker.
Cue Corinne, me, silently crying, tears streaming down my face, reliving the alienation of being rejected by my peers in middle and high school. I'm fine.
This was a moment of awakening for poor Lily and Corinne. Her voice recalls, up until that point, I thought I just had to be myself to fit in. After that, I started feeling like Alice in Wonderland, like school was full of rules that I didn't understand. If you wanted people to like you, don't be yourself. We see little Lily sitting alone on the school steps when she's approached by her grandpa. She's attempting to tie one of her own friendship bracelets onto her wrist as grandpa tells her, "These children don't understand you. Let's get ice cream." He helps her finish tying the bracelet into a knot, and she follows him out, but not before covering the bracelet with the sleeve of her coat so no one can see it.
Aww.
We cut to modern day Lily, jotting down her thoughts in the journal and realizing that not much has changed. Her voice says, "So maybe being myself hasn't gotten me popular or invited to a lot of parties, but what it has done is made me share childhood traumas with a complete stranger.
Yay!
But I really hope I haven't scared you off. If I haven't, you can leave this journal in Central Park at the patron saint of weird girls." We cut to Dash taking the notebook to the statue of Alice in Wonderland. And if you'd like a visual representation, please visit One Dry Kiss's Instagram page and the post we made on October, was it 12th or 15th? One of those dates, 2022. Because we both took a picture of us in front of this said statue.
It was so cool seeing that statue in real life.
Yay! But when Dash gets to this special statue, he doesn't leave the book. He thinks better of it, takes it with him, and hurries away. Did Lily's honesty scare him after all? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
No, Tam. No.
No. I know because I did see it, but you know too, gentle listeners.
He goes to Two Boots Pizza to regale his friend Boomer about the most recent confession, and Dash is pissed and said, "When I first read Lily's confession, I wrote about how I used a time machine to go back and end that little shit. A highly realistic version of a time machine, too." I'm like, okay, Dash. Can't wait for you to actually make that happen and travel. Huh. And that little shit that called her a weirdo. But aside from time travel not being a viable option, he also didn't want her to think he was a Cro-Magnon idiot. Boomer is tickled and says, "It's so sweet how protective you are of your paper girlfriend." And that's what I think this episode should have been called, Paper Girlfriend.
That's good, yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Dash disputes that she's his girlfriend, and before Boomer can make a PowerPoint presentation of how she's the most intimate relationship since she, who will not be named, a couple of boisterous yarmulke-clad bros sweep in and immediately start tearing flyers off the pizza place bulletin board. Boomer calls, "Hey, quit littering!" But the guys insist that the flyer that they are bestowing upon his establishment is way more important than anything else on the board. Plus, those ones they're tearing off are expired. Mm. Boomer asks excitedly, "You guys doing an underground show?" Bro One points at the poorly Xeroxed copy of a loaf of challah bread and calls it a beacon to all the kooks and weirdos who follow the challah back boys. Dash gets an idea and snatches the flyer off the board and heads towards the door. The Holla Back boys shout after him, "Hey, are you coming to our show?" Dash responds as he rushes out the door, "Nope." A short while later, we see Lily at the Central Park Alice statue. Initially, she doesn't see the book, but realizes that Dash might not have put it in plain sight. She contemplates what her mystery guy might have done and sees Alice's hand that almost looks as if it's pointing down under the mushrooms she's sitting on. Lily peeks under, and sure enough, nestled lovingly inside a crevice is the notebook. And tucked within the pages is the flyer for the Holla Back Boys show. And a note saying, "Weird is cool and I'm going to prove it. Happy Hanukkah!"
Lily rushes home and shares the flyer with her brother Langston. He's enamored with the underground Jewcore punk show. And in spite of Lily's barrage of excuses as to why she can't go, he disagrees and solicits Benny to help. Unbeknownst to Lily, Benny is fluent in clubbing. She's thrilled to have the help, but when she proposes, "Why don't both of you just come with me?" Langston scoffs. "And leave the house? A man after my own heart, even though he's gay." But Benny is undeterred, and after learning that Lily makes her own clothes, encourages her, "What's something that you've always wanted to wear, but you never have the guts?" Lily, after thinking for a few moments, dives under her bed and produces a spaghetti-strapped blue sequence dress. It's got two different kinds of fabric, which confused me in many, many spots, so.
Yeah, I talk about it, too.
Yeah. We cut to Lily donning the dress and making her way through a dark club where a techno version of the White Rabbit is throbbing around her and glow-painted patrons swarm around. "One pill makes you smaller and one pill makes you..."
Oh, one pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small.
There you go. Curran's got it.
"And the one that mother gives you, don't do anything at all. Go ask Alice."
Which is what Tamar keeps thinking the song is called. Because yeah. In the notes she called it Go Ask Alice instead of the White Rabbit.
Which makes sense.
Anywho, that song is throbbing around her and glow-painted patrons swarm about, blowing smoke in her face and grimacing at her menacingly. Across the darkened floor, she sees a masked guy holding her notebook to his chest and she rushes towards him exclaiming, "It's you! You're here!" The guy takes one look at her and starts shaking his head and laughing.
"Oh, no, no, no. Go back home and play board games with your grandpa. You don't belong here. It's no wonder you need this. No one wants you in real life."
Oof.
He flings the notebook at her and tells anyone around who will listen, "That girl's so weird." A beeping goes off and Lily shoots up in bed. It was all a dream.
Thank goodness.
And it's only 1 a.m. She set her alarm and gets up to get ready for the club. Dash's voiceover tells her, "This night is going to change your life. Come on, trust me."
as she eyes the blue dress hanging on her door with trepidation.
We next see her donning that hot, sparkly party dress and getting out of a cab. She's in front of a closed bakery with all the lights off, and Dash's voice tells her, "If you're staring at a loaf of challah, you're in the right place. But what I'm staring at is what I thought was a cute sparkly blue slip dress with spaghetti straps," all of which is true, but then there's 4-inch tall angled tassel fringe through the midsection of the dress. Usually I'm on board with Lily's fashion choices, but this one confused me. Although if I were wearing it, I'd be continually running my fingers through the tassel fringe and likely braiding it. Which, while entertaining for me, might not be the best thing either.
And I thought one thing when I saw her getting out in the winter New York City streets in that dress. She must be fucking cold. Oh my God. You are not wearing a jacket and you are a slip of a girl.
But she's going to be inside soon.
Sure.
Sure enough, in the window of the seemingly abandoned bakery is a picture of challah bread. Lily approaches it and is met by a bearded drag queen who is wearing her own blue sequins and blue boa. Lily says, "I'm looking for a club." The queen asks, "What's dragging you down, Bubala?" Lily's confused. "Does something have to be dragging me down?" She responds, "If you want to get into this club, it does." Lily contemplates this for a moment before offering, "Well, it's Christmas and my parents are gone." The queen's face softens. "I'm sorry, when did they pass?" Lily shakes her head, correcting. No, they're not dead. They're just in Fiji." Which causes him to quickly dismiss her. Literally realizing her window is closing, she frantically pleads with the unmoved queen, who repeats, "You want in? Then give me some pain. Give me a real drag." Which causes Lily to blurt, "Okay, I've never been kissed." He sizes her up and asks, "How old are you?" When she admits, 17. He probably pulls open a hatchway inside the sidewalk and orders her, "Get down there and rectify the situation." She smiles broadly, thanking him before he adds, "Down the rabbit hole." She pauses momentarily, wondering if this is a sign, but nixes the thought and makes her way through a brick corridor that's decidedly different than the one in her dream. Dash encourages her in his note, "Go get 'em."
I was wondering when I wrote this if there was a name for those, like, hatchway sidewalk openings. I'm sure there probably is.
Yes.
But I didn't care enough to look. So any New Yorkers or big city people, just scream it out at us right now because we're listening.
Yes.
And even though this club is different than her dreams, the lighting is brighter, the music is more upbeat, but she still initially has a terrible time. Once she's inside the club, she doesn't see another drag queen and bumps him. He practically snarls, "Excuse you, rude." She tries backing away only to collide with two drunk girls who give her the stink eye and say with slurred voices, "Do you know what? We're not putting up with Tiffany's shit and we're not putting up with yours."
Ooh.
Their menacing demeanor causes her to flee right into somebody's outstretched hand, which knocks their drink all over her face. She's overwhelmed, sees the restroom door open in the distance, and hurries towards it, cutting the line. Tamara says, "The line cutting in this movie is rampant and maybe gives some insight as to why New Yorkers are so pissed off all the time." She closes herself inside, much to the irritation of the line of people, and stares at herself in the mirror, near tears. She grabs a paper towel and starts sopping the alcohol off her face. And we can tell that she's not going to be long for this clubbing world until she notices something scrawled in the upper right-hand corner of the mirror that reads, "Get back out there, Lily," with the smiley face next to it.
Aww.
She knows the message is from Dash and smiles. She produces her own pen from her purse and jots down something below it and heads back out there with a defiant air about her.
Ooh.
Once on the dance floor, the Jewcore punk band is explaining the story of Hanukkah and how a group of rebels were driven from their temple, but they took it back and partied for 8 straight nights. And what's more punk than that?
Yeah.
And that spirit of Hanukkah rising up against your oppressors and not letting other people define you. Lily is moved by the story, and when the klezmer, punk music plays, she's bopping her head along and catches the attention of her neighbor, Carrie, who's surprised to see her there, but compliments Lily's really cool red boots.
Aw, they are fucking rad. I love her red roper boots with her dress. That's a big yes please for me, Corinne, who wears canvas shoes with all my dresses. Thank you very much.
Lily also catches the attention of the door drag queen, who tells her, "You're not going to get kissed on the sidelines. Get out there." He drags Lily into the center of the dance floor, announcing, "Excuse me, coming through. Mazel, mazel, coming through." And like the fairy drag mother that she is, she leans towards Lily and says, as her glittered beard beautifully catches the light, "You show 'em what you got, okay?" And then leaves Lily to do her thing. At first, Lily awkwardly stomps her foot over and over again. It's as if she's in a southern band, and all she needs is a washboard to drag her fingernails across. Then she starts jumping, then kicking, Rockette style. Then she starts throwing elbows. She does what I affectionately have dubbed the elbow dance.
Oh.
Elbow left, elbow right, elbow center through the night, and it's catching other dancers' attention. People start mimicking her sweet, sweet moves, and emboldened by this, she grabs somebody's hand and creates a conga line of sorts throughout the club. By the end of the dance, people are picking her up on their shoulders, which catches the attention of the band, who noticed that she has a red notebook tucked in her purse. They excitedly point out to each other as Lily gets a crown placed on her head by her fairy drag mother, who stole it from the surly drag queen, who called her rude earlier. Lily's on cloud nine until she sees E, her childhood crush. And just a second, I accidentally went to the very top of the...
I sabotaged Corinne's pad, so I'll be taking over for her at first.
Thank you.
Sure.
She thinks he's notebook boy. But when he seems oblivious to her questions and notices the notebook in her purse and asks, "Did you bring a notebook to the club? You are so weird." And she goes from feeling triumphant and like she can conquer anything to feeling like that middle school girl whose bracelets were all tossed on the floor. I have so been there. I went to a party one time and this was like in adulthood. I knew 90% of the people there. And I talked with one person who I wasn't really familiar with. And he was being an ass. And I was like, I was just trying to be friendly and ask him just general questions. And so I say to him something that I would have never had the nerve to say in my teens. "I feel like you're being mean to me." And he said, "Yes, I am."
Wow.
And it was like, I then suddenly felt like I was back in high school being picked on. And I was like, okay, I'm leaving. I mean, I didn't leave the party at that point in time, but like part of my soul died.
Did you ever find out who that guy was?
Oh, no, I know exactly who that guy Ugh. Was. Yeah. Who I later became friends with, but and he doesn't remember saying that
of
to me.
Of course he doesn't, because that puts him in a shitty, shitty light.
Yeah.
Selective memory much, sir.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So she gets the fuck out of there, which I totally don't blame her. And in her hasty retreat, she loses a boot, but it doesn't stop her. She jumps into a cab as E calls after her. Inside the cab, Lily realizes that she didn't stand up to her oppressors when she had the chance. And worst yet, she didn't hand off the notebook. She is distraught as her voiceover asks, "How are you going to find me now? You're not, that's how. And you shouldn't, because I'm not just a weird girl, I'm a loser." When she gets back home at 4 in the morning, the front apartment door is open. That's unsettling.
No, I know.
Langston tries to motion for her to run away, and initially she thinks they're being robbed. But after hiding under the table, seeing a bunch of oranges on the floor, and bumping her head, she hears a voice that's all too familiar. Fuck. Her grandpa's home. And he finds her and yells, "You're grounded forever!" And we will dive into episode 4 after the break.
And we're back and ready to dive into episode 4, which is called Cinderella.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Cinderella, Cinderella. Yes.
Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy plays as Dash finds the Hollow Boys the next morning. They are asleep on a nasty-looking couch that's laid out in the middle of the previous night's venue. They're the only ones there and are curled up together asleep.
Okay, but I have a question. Are they sleeping?
It looked like they were. Secondary question. At first, I thought they were brothers slash bandmates, but they were curled up like they were a couple.
Yeah, I know. I had questions about that, too. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, neither was I. Dash tries asking for the book, but the bros groggily tell him.
Because they were asleep.
What?
They were groggy because they were asleep.
What are you insinuating?
Because you said the Hollow Boys, they are asleep on the nasty looking couch and they're the only ones there and are curled up together asleep.
Oh, I got you. Just to clear that up, Corinne, they're asleep. Yeah. He finds them asleep on the couch asleep. They're the only ones there asleep.
It's like the frozen mashed potatoes that are in the freezer.
Oh, shush.
What? I said that.
The bros groggily tell him that they don't have it. Dash questions, didn't she come here? And they attempt to inform him, no, she did. The girl's wild, man. She had some sick dance moves in her bizarro red boots, and then, poof, she disappeared. Dash surmises that the guys are too out of it to remember the night's events clearly and figures that Lily left the book somewhere, and he just has to find it. He goes poking through the venue but finds nothing but questionable sticky spots. When he goes to the bathroom to wash his hands, he sees his original message, get back out there, Lily, right on top of another, which we finally see reads, but I'm scared. It's from her. Dash rushes back out to find the bandmates trying to rouse themselves, and now he feels the same way she did when she wrote the previous entry. Dash fears that he's pushed her too hard and has driven Lily away.
Aww.
He brusquely tries explaining this to the bandmates while rushing out. One yells after him emphatically, but she was the queen! Dash doesn't know what we in the Hollaback Boys know, that for a time during the night, she really killed it.
Yes, she did.
Dash hurries out and is rewarded with a clue. One red boot floating in the sidewalk sludge. He picks it up and the Kefka punk bandmates who followed him out.
What's Kefka?
I have no idea, but it kept saying that when the music played.
Oh, okay.
In the subtitles, it's like Kefka music plays. And I'm like, okay.
I was like, Tam must know something that I don't know.
Nope.
She knows how to read.
Yes,
is what Tam
Netflix
knows.
Tells me it was Kefka punk music. Who followed him out, inform him, hey, that's her shoe. Dash asks, why would she leave her boot? And the bros answer matter-of-factly, maybe as a clue, bro. Dash peers inside, and much like the Santa hat, there is a clue. The initials TDF are etched inside.
Ooh. We cut to Dash in his father's apartment trying to track down anybody that had passed him the notebook in their previous dare exchanges. I love when he calls the Strand and he's like, he's got brown hair and he's really surly. And the person obviously says, that's just about everyone who works here. And he's like, you need new employees.
Yeah, that was cute.
He's having little luck. Boomer is being supremely unhelpful by going down the list of potential names that have TDF initials. Tilly Don Weinstein, Taylor DeFranco, Tammy Denise Feeney.
Tamitha
Denise Feeney. Maybe I should start calling you Tamitha.
Nope.
Like the sexy version of your name?
No. No, please don't.
Okay, fine. Are you sure, Tamitha?
Yeah. Oh my God, stop. Stop.
I was just trying to have to see if you suddenly were like, you know what? I feel deep inside like a Tamitha.
I mulled over it. No.
Boomer, of course, is off base, but his guesses, like him, are pretty fun. When Dash points this out, Boomer, with finality, offers Tour de France. Dash is at his wit's end, and his friend offers a different route. I'm going to ask the mommy app. Boomer grabs Dash's phone, downloads the app, uploads a picture of the boot, and exclaims, those women are beasts. They can fight anything. Dash reminds him, we're not supposed to use phones. Boomer seriously replies, yeah, but she might not even be playing anymore. Not that I would know what she would do or what she's like, because I've never met her, obviously. Dash snatches the phone out of his friend's hand with a, oh, what the hell, as this is the ammunition he needs to search TDF. The first hit is Theater Development Fund, which he finds out is one of the oldest costume rental shops in Queens. Dash and Boomer rush over there, only to find out that the boots were loaned to LaGuardia High School, and after being claimed missing, they were later paid for by Lillian St. Clair Dubois, who also left her address.
The friends chuckle because that's for sure their Lily, and obviously a fake last name. The attendant snatches the boot back, claiming that they are the rightful owners. But Dash, noticing she's wearing a Phantom of the Opera shirt, tries appealing to her romantic, theatrical side and reveals, "You don't know me, but I'm like the Phantom." The woman is aghast. "His name is Eric." Dash affirms, "Right, I'm like Eric. I wear a mask because I don't let people get to know me. But this girl who I've never met and only know through her words, she gets me." He further explains the missing boot situation, and the attendant is touched and asks, "Like Cinderella?" Dash leans into this, nods, and pulls from his rom-com lexicon that he obviously has, saying, "I'm just a boy with a boot asking you to help me find..." He gulps down his dignity as he forces out the line he know will clinch it. "My Cinderella." And the rom-com reference I'm referring to is in Notting Hill when Julia Roberts says, "I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her." Because he said it in the, with the same cadence.
Yep.
This wins the attendant's well wishes as she gushes, "I am not one to stand in the way of true love." She thrusts the boot and the address into Dash's arms, and with that they leave with the magical shoe and the location of the owner. "One day my prince will come." Once they're alone, Boomer asks, "Did you mean everything you just said?" Dash looks at his friend incredulously and says, "No, I was just trying to get the address." They both look as if they don't believe that and head off to Lillian St. Clair Dubois.
Meanwhile, Lily finds her brother in the throes of sickness that he's acquired from the many nights sleeping on the roof with Benny. She asks him to deliver the book to Two Boots Pizza since she's grounded forever, and Langston declines, saying, "I have a fever." Lily doesn't believe him and regales him with the previous night's events, including her interaction with Edgar Tybalt, or E as we know him.
Ugh.
She rants, "He's the same mean little boy, but now he's in the body of a hot guy." This piques Langston's attention. He grabs the notebook to see what her last entry was to Dash, and it reads, "It's been fun, but I got a lot going on right now." He throws the book down disgusted and asks, "You're quitting?" She nods sadly. "Better to do it now. That way I can leave with my dignity and always be the cool girl in his head."
Oh, gosh.
Langston hands her the book, because if she's going to quit, he's out.
Uh-huh.
We cut to Boomer and Dash at the stoop of the address given to them by TDF. Simultaneously, Lily is interrupted from making Langston some tea by her doorbell. She answers it to find Dash and his bestie? No, it's her grandpa's poker buddies.
Uh-huh.
She greets them all and then tries nonchalantly to scoot out the door, only to be caught by her grandpa, who recruits all of his friends to keep an eye on her because she's grounded forever.
Ooh.
Meanwhile, Boomer and Dash are arguing over who's going to ring the front doorbell.
Okay, now we got to stop for a moment, please, because I just realized, because of your beautiful writing, that it was supposed to be like a, they're going to be showing up potentially to her place.
Right, Lily's apartment.
I did not pick up on that any of the times I watched it. I was just like, oh, and they cut to Lily doing her thing over there. Like, I was just like, they're in a different place entirely. Okay, thank you for explaining that, Tam. Brain hamster activate.
Happy to clear that up for
you. Yeah.
Boomer and Dash are arguing over who's going to ring the bell, and Dash finally takes the helm because, as he says it, this is a Dash and Lily moment. Boomer happily relents and leaves, but when Dash finally rings that doorbell, he is met by a very attractive but much older Asian woman. He's surprised and asks, "Lily?" The woman confirms, "Lillian?" Dash trepidatiously asks, "Did you go to a punk show last night?" Lillian contemplates this but relays, "A punk show? No, not last night. The friend I was with doesn't appreciate punk music." Dash finally asks sheepishly, "Have you been corresponding with somebody through a notebook?" Lillian smiles knowingly and says, "Ah, now I understand why you're here," and invites him inside for coffee.
And I love how when she asks, "Coffee?" he responds,
"Of course.
Always." Dash walks into a lavish New York apartment, which is very opulent. He's still confused as to whether This is his Lily. When the woman finally emerges with a coffee tray.
Too many finallys, Tamara.
And finally informs him.
Oh, God.
I'm not the Lily you're looking for. You are looking for my grandniece, whom I gave the red notebooks to. Dash is pleasantly surprised. Lily has told him about her in the notebook. He exclaims, "You're Miss Basil E." She confirms this and adds, "I used to send Lily and her brother on scavenger hunts, like in the book from the mixed up files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler." When Dash learns this, he is tickled because he's very familiar with that book. And maybe he and Lily are soulmates after all. And I know I've never read it because I found the illustrations to be quite unappealing. But I'm wondering, Tam, if you have ever read that book.
Never heard of it.
Oh, okay.
No.
My sister, like, I know for sure that she read it because mm-hmm. it was in our house like a couple of different times or mm-hmm. whatever. And I'd look at it and I'd be like, yeah, but these pictures are gross. I don't like them.
Corinne's not finicky with her reading.
No. Don't judge a book by its cover. Fuck that. I'd judge a book by its illustrations.
Damn
okay?
straight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all part and parcel. Dash asks, can I talk to her? Mrs. Basil E's eyes twinkle as she asks, are you in love with her? Dash emphatically denies us, stating, well, I hardly know her. Lily's great aunt begins removing the coffee setting, saying, I don't think you're worth her time. Dash disagrees. So, in an effort to give him a second chance, Tam.
Yes, champs, because yes. He's not a champion unless he can win the heart of her niece.
Oh, nice one.
I'm here to save you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Miss Basil peppers him with questions. Do you believe in fairies, the power of wishes, or love at first sight? He admits, I'm not much of a believer guy. And Miss Basil lowers back in her seat with a gleam in her eye and relays, but you did believe you could find a girl with a boot. My brother, her grandfather, won't let you see her. He guards her like a jewel. He won't even let me see her, and I'm her godmother. Dash implores her to try, and she is unmoved until he admits, last night I asked her to do something that really scared her, and I haven't talked to her or heard from her since. I don't know if she's hurt, and I just want to make sure she's okay. Basil asks flatly, why? And Dash answers with hearts in his eyes, because I care about her. This is all the great auntie needed. She jumps up saying, that's more like it. And she's off to Lily's house.
I do have to say that I left out a line that made me really love Miss Basil E.
Ooh, please say it.
When Dash goes into her very lavish, opulent apartment, he says, do you live here alone? And she says, oh, I live here, but I am rarely alone. And I'm like, meow, bitch. Yes, you are. Get down with your bad self.
I'm like, I think it's a house. I don't think she worked. And I think she's just had some rich ex-husbands that she's managed to parlay.
I'm going to go one further and say she was a self-made millionaire that did not have to rely on men to make her money.
Okay.
She did something fucking fabulous that we can't even wrap our heads around and made her own goddamn fortune.
She's like fucking Iris Apfel.
Damn it. I don't know that one either.
Oh, what?
Gesundheit?
Okay. She recently died, but she was like a senior citizen style icon. And you would recognize a picture of her just a second. So she's just this like amazing artist lady. And there's a documentary about her that we should watch.
Oh, yes. I do recognize her. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Super interesting lady.
Later that night, Miss Basil E. goes to Lily's apartment alone. And Lily's thrilled to see her. It's obvious that it's been a while since they've last spoke. And when they sneak into the living room, away from Grandpa's poker name. It's contagious, damn it. From Grandpa's poker game, her godmother asks if she's all right. And Lily admits, it's been a little rocky. Miss Basil E. says matter-of-factly, that's because you only have one boot. Lily's confused until she explains that someone had tracked her down to find the owner of the shoe. Someone with very impressive detective work who really cares. Lily realizes she's talking about Notebook Boy and is initially thrilled, but it's short-lived when she informs her aunt, the girl he thinks he's after doesn't exist. Miss Basil E. knows differently and tries convincing her otherwise until they're interrupted by, dun-dun-dun, Grandpa.
Ooh.
He sees the pair and bellows, "Everyone out of this apartment!" His sister stands stoically as the poker buddies mill past her, including Santa Sal from episode 1 and 2, who passes by Miss Basil Ian and says, "Looking good, Lillian."
I know. And we're like, "Oh, I see. I see what's going on here."
And when the room is empty, containing only he, Lillian, Miss Basil Ian, he reiterates, "I said everyone." But his sister's no sheep. Sheep demands to know why Lily is grounded, and Grandpa informs her, "You lost the right to know that when you abandoned this family." Lily's godmama argues, "Touring with the Rolling Stones is not abandoning the family." He adds, "You're a bad influence." She counters, "Why? 'Cause I took Lily to an off-Broadway show?" Grandpa rebuts, "You flew her to Las Vegas." Basil declares, "That is off-Broadway. And I am her godmother, so I demand to have my say." Grandpa relents and sends Lily to her room, but she hovers around the kitchen, attempting to eavesdrop.
Man, I'm like, I love Auntie, because she's like, "I took her to an off-Broadway play." And Grandpa was like, "It was Las Vegas." And I'm like, "Agreed, Grandpa, that's kind of not okay." And then she's like, "That is off Broadway." And I'm like,
way off.
And I'm like, "But I love you, Miss Basilie."
Yes, I do. Yeah, I love her too.
I'm like, "Auntie, you can take me to Vegas for an off Broadway play too." A blurry-eyed Langston, peering into the kitchen from behind his bedroom door, sees Lily watching the duo talk. And he says, "At least you got to go out to a club once, because they're never going to let you out of the house now." This incenses Lily, and she storms into the front room to confront her grandpa, declaring, "I've had enough. This is my life end." She trails off when she realizes that Grandpa is in tears. She turns to her auntie and accuses, "What did you say to him?" Auntie vaguely but helpfully responds, "You and your grandfather need to have a conversation." Lily immediately apologizing, promising never to leave the house again, but realizes that's not the cause of his tears when her godmother assures her, "This isn't about you," and gets up to leave. Lily frantically begs her to stay, saying, "I can't handle this. He's crying." To which her godmother responds, "Argue for your limitations, and they are surely yours."
Ooh, burn. Sick burn.
And I am shooketh by that truth bomb, because it makes me reflect on my life and what I think are my limitations.
Yeah. Because if you think those are your limits, you're never going to go past them. Oh my gosh. No truth or thing has been said in a few words.
No. My, I was like,
mind blown.
Yes.
Mind blown. Who knew?
100%. But Lily, since she's in the middle of big turmoil, because we know that she has the critical thinking and the smarts to figure it out, doesn't have the same moment of reflection that I or Tam did. And asks, "What does that mean?" But her aunt just chuckles, kisses her on the cheek, and walks out the door without another word. Chuckles, love that word. Thank you for including it.
Chuckle. It's fun to say, too.
Lily trepidatiously sits across from her grandpa, who admits that he proposed to his friend Mabel while he was down in Florida. His friend Mabel. Yes. "I usually propose to my friends. Tamara, do you want to marry me?"
Not right now. I'm a little fresh out of a relationship. Okay, sorry.
So he proposed to his friend Mabel. She declined, which is why he's home. After some gentle prodding, Lily discovers that it's because Mabel didn't want to move to New York. She hates it there. And he couldn't move to Florida because his family is here. Lily asks, "Do you like Mabel?" He responds hesitantly, "She makes me feel less lonely."
That's not a good answer, Grandpa. That's a shitty answer.
I was like, that's not really who I want to marry.
Maybe that's why she said no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of just think he's out of his, out of touch with his feelings, though, and not really willing to admit.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems awesome. Passionate. But does open up a little bit.
Yeah. Lily asks, "Do you like Florida?" He casually says, "It's not bad and the produce is pretty good." Cue oranges on floor. Yes. Lily suggests, "I think you should talk to Mabel. See if you can work something out."
There are worse things than sitting by a pool feeling less lonely. Grandpa's face softens as he finally admits, which is why I'm home sooner than expected. I didn't want to be alone for Christmas. So I came home to find Langston in bed with a strange boy and you out all night. I acted too harshly, so you're grounded till the end of the day. He smiles nostalgically and adds, and I'd like to take you out for ice cream as an apology. Lily smiles back but responds, you know what I'd really like? P-I-Z-Z-A-A, pizza is so good today.
Corinne's always got to steal my thunder. Thank you for the singing to my portion.
You're welcome. I'm just like rolling out the red carpet for you.
Cut to Two Boots Pizza. This is where Lily has chosen to get her apology meal. She goes to order, and when Boomer sees her, he is ecstatic and informs her, we've been looking all over for you. She produces a notebook from her purse and admits, I know, I chickened out. A disgruntled customer calls out from behind her, because she cut the line again. Hey, you gonna order? She ignores him and instead pushes the notebook across the counter asking, you deliver, right? Boomer sheepishly informs her, I'm kind of on duty right now, but she's unrelenting. But this delivery's time sensitive. I need it there before 5 p.m. Boomer looks at her. She looks at him. They look at each other before he grabs the book and sprints out the front door. The first pizza patron in line calls out, he's coming back, right? To which Lily just smiles. Meanwhile, Boomer rushes over to Dash's place and thrusts the notebook into his hand, insisting, sorry, somebody left it in the video slot. Go, 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 go. He hurries his friends downstairs into the elevator while Lily's voiceover informs him, when I got to that club, I was so worried about what people were thinking about that all I could see was the bad stuff. I don't do well with the bad stuff. I always tell myself when there's rain, look for the rainbow. But I couldn't find one, so I ran. I saw your message and it made me go back out there. And this time I saw the good. I could join them or leave. And I joined them. And it was like the whole new world opened up. I want to do the same for you. Go to the Nutcracker House and you'll know it when you see it.
Dash takes her direction and finds himself at Diker Heights, where there is a slew of large houses decked out in Christmas decorations. He wanders from each one until he comes across a home that makes all the other houses pale in comparison. It looks like it was invaded by giant Nutcracker soldiers. She asks him to write down what he sees, and he does, stating, I see plastic nutcrackers, fake Santas, and nothing's real. Her voiceover tells him, now look again. Give it another chance. He looks again and notices a sweet older couple and writes about them. They probably come here every year and take pictures in front of the same house. I see them holding hands, and I think they must know each other really well. That reminds me of yesterday. I think yesterday we were in, at the Target. Was it the Target? There was a guy who you said, oh, blah, 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 about. And I was like, nah, da, 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 da. And you were like, you made this whole backstory about him and like what he was doing and like where he was going.
Oh, we were driving to Target and we had stopped to turn, but the traffic was backed up. And the guy in front of us got out of the passenger seat and just exited the car and went onto the sidewalk and started walking in the same direction we were driving. And I said, oh, nice vehicle exiting. Uh-huh. And you're like, yeah, but I wonder where he's going. There's nothing out here, because there was like a big swath of nothing and kind of like not the greatest of neighborhoods in front of him. But at the very end of that half a block, there were like three very nice looking Victorian style houses with the lights on. And I was like, he's walking home and just decided to get out because the traffic had stopped and it's a nice night and he lives right there. He's going home to his warm house. That's as far as I remember.
Yeah. So Dash was very much on your page with that.
I just have to say that Dash, of course, shits all over the project. Everything's fake. The world is plastic. The decorations are militant.
The amount of fossil fuels that were used to create this scene is obscene.
Mm. And fake plastic nutcrackers. It wears him out. It wears him out.
So he says, I see them holding hands. I think they must know each other really well. After this revelation, Lily's entry tells him, I told myself I didn't fit in anywhere and that one day something would magically change. But little known fact, the word abracadabra comes from the Arabic word avracadabra, meaning I create as I speak. We make our own magic. This notebook is magic, and we see what we look for. I hope you'll keep looking for the good stuff to help you out. Be at the last house on the block when the clock strikes 5, because I'm going to send you a sign. Dash does, and at 5 o'clock, as he stands in front of a very historic mansion, the archway that adorns the long walkway lights up, and bright red letters read, Believe.
Believe. I misspelled it.
As Tamara puts it, Believe. Just then, snow begins to fall, and he looks around in wonder and tries catching flakes on his tongue. He takes another look around him, and the city streets seem filled with love and togetherness. We hear Nat King Cole singing in the background. And so I'm offering this simple phrase for kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. Then his phone buzzes, and when he pulls it out of his pocket, he sees it's a text from Sophia, she who will not shall not be named, asking, can I see you this holiday? The end. Tam, I had a question.
Sure.
Okay, you and me.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think we are in this? Like, what's our personality most like?
Oh my God, it's obvious because in episode 1 and 2, we were fighting over it because you very distinctly read the Lily part, and which was very small, and I got the Dash part, which was like 2 paragraphs, and I'm like, I see what you did there. You are the Lily and I am the Dash.
I don't think you're the Dash.
Okay, I felt that in the moment. Because I'm like, don't say Merry Christmas, but 3 days before Christmas, so I'm not very holiday-y.
You know, I think Dash is an interesting character, and he has a lot of growth to go. But honestly, I think of you as Boomer.
Ew.
You don't like what?
I'm the side character
that doesn't get
his story told.
I'm just talking about personality. I'm not talking about percentage of storyline. Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't see that. I miss Basilee.
Okay, sure.
I don't think I very well relate to anybody in this story, honestly. Like, I got a little bit of column A, a little bit of column C, a little bit of column D, E, F, but I wouldn't say I'm Boomer either.
Okay, so you're Langston. Gotcha.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Am I going to ask, who do you think you are, Corinne?
Oh, well, I was wondering who you thought I was.
Lily, duh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I totally relate to Lily. I vibe with Lily. And if I, you know.
You squealed at some of her outfit choices. So, no, I don't think you're Lily at all.
If I were to, like, kind of choose in order, it would be, like, Lily, and then I would be Boomer. And then, yeah. That's the end.
I'm too dark and brooding and complicated to be encompassed by any one person in this movie.
Uh-huh. Sure. Sure, Boomer. Sure. The reason why I said Boomer for you is because you have, like, this really great, playful personality. And, like, Boomer is somebody who is very interested in being authentic to himself. And I feel like you're very interested in being authentic to yourself as well.
Fair, but I would totally go after Lily and be like, sorry, Dash, I am your friend, but this girl, shit. I mean, you feeling this heat coming across this table, Lily? You're not going to like my boy. I mean, he's cool. He's a good friend. Don't get me wrong, but he's a little bit surly. And if you ask him what the best of is sometimes, he'll go down a deep, deep dark hole and turn it around.
So now that we've gone down the personality path, which I thought was going to be more interesting than it was,
some ideas work better than others.
I'm just in a mood, honestly. I'm like, I can't relate to anybody right now. I can't relate to anybody. Actually, I feel a little bit like Margaret Cho, the comedian, when she talks about her grandma.
There you go.
Yeah. I think we should just cut it there.
Okay, yeah.
Because everybody except for Dash is on the nice list. He's only on the naughty list because he shitstormed that fucking What's Your Best Christmas Story.
Grandpa's on the naughty list.
Yeah, he apologized, though.
No, he did. Absolutely. He made things right, ultimately. But
yes, he made up with the sister. And then he also said, I want to make it up to you. You're not grounded anymore. I overreacted because I was in my feels.
Yeah.
So he was like, they're writing Grandpa. And before they could finish Pa on the naughty list, he got erased because he was back on the nice list.
Well, Langston's on the naughty list, but we'll find out more fully why the next chunk.
Oh.
Yes.
I don't remember why Langston's on the naughty list.
Well, he foreshadowed it. He innuendoed towards it in this episode. So.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Gentle listeners, got to keep those listening ears listening to find out or watch the show on Netflix. Duh.
Nah.
Tam, hello. What do we have coming up next week?
We have more Dash and Lily. We will be going over episode 5, which is Sophia and Edgar, and episode 6, which is Christmas Eve.
Ooh, I'm so excited. And we're coming up on Christmas. Chinga, 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 chinga. Yeah, we're getting our tree.
Yes, we're getting our tree in a couple of days. I'm going to put up all of my ornaments, which I have gotten one for every year for like the last 25 years.
So the tree is going to be just comprised of Tam's ornaments, basically. Corinne will not be breaking out her ornaments this year.
She can.
No, I'm going to put up some of mine.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good, good, good.
And if you have anything you'd like to say about our Christmas tree, Dash and Lily, about who you think Tam is most like in Dash and Lily.
I know. Everybody's like, Dash. It's definitely Dash. And I'm like, everything sucks. The world is a horrible place. I don't like Christmas. But mind you, it's the place I'm at right now, okay? This is not forever.
I know it's just one stop on the road to greatness, and I'm okay with that.
I contain multitudes. Multitudes, I tell you.
You do. You do. You're like if Boomer and Dash had a baby.
I should have said that. That's my answer. I'm sticking. Yep. You're going to have a love child between the two of them. How's it going to happen? I don't know.
I don't know, but it'll work. It'll work. Yep. Yeah. So if you have anything to say about any of that, you can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on the social medias, Insta and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast as a very special Christmas gift to us, we'd appreciate it.
Yes!
But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. The attendant hands Dash the red notebook and inside... Excuse me.
It's a very emotional spot, Corinne. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Gather your strength. Jesus. Lucky me, I get hold music while Corinne looks something up on her iPad.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, your troubles will be far away.
Corinne actually doesn't need to look up anything. She just wants me and all of you guys to hear her
sing. Oh, I'm cutting that out. I am cutting the two different interstitial singings that I did out. Just in case you were wondering.
Then it's just for me. She just wants me to listen to her singing. Yes.